Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show is about two of life's greatest culinary pleasures, wine and cheese. Each has a seemingly endless array of flavors, textures, and aromas. Why, we could spend all day talking about them. But sadly, we only have this hour, so we must make the best of it. Fortunately, we have some folks here in the studio who can help you plan your next wine and cheese gathering. Dominic Pernomo is the co-owner of Yono's Restaurant and DP and American Brasserie here in Albany. He's one of just four certified sommeliers in New York State. Also joining us today, Claire Pogue and Sandy Pogue. Claire is a native of Montreal. Her culinary career has taken her from the kitchens of acclaimed New York City caterer Glorious Foods to several luxury resorts in Vail, and finally to here at the Epicurean. And always nice to have Claire here. And she brought an extra guest, Sandy Pogue, who is the cheesemonger at Epicurean. Also with us today, Susie Konecki is the cheesemaker at Cricket Creek Farms in Williamstown, Massachusetts. She studied agriculture and rural development at Cornell University and is a longtime lover of cheese. And boy, did she bring some cheese. We'll talk about that in a moment. Number to call here on the Food Friday Vox Pop is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. 2551. You can also comment on our webpage, wamc.org/voxpop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But we do love your calls, 800-348-2551. If you have a wine question or a cheese question or a combination thereof question, we would love to hear from you. And panel, it's awfully nice to have you all here today. Nice to have you all back.
Wonderful to be here, Ray.
Thank you for having us.
And if you have to run, Dominic, we understand.
Thank you.
Yes. Expecting a blessed arrival any time now. So I hope your cell phone is on, but not on ring. Just have it on silent.
Yeah, it's on silent.
Good. Very good. Very good. Claire, you have been here before, and you brought your cheesemonger husband with you. Nice to have you here.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have you both here. And Susie Konecki, you're new to the program.
I am. Never been here before.
So what happens is we'll talk about stuff and we'll eat some food and drink some wine and then we'll take some calls.
Sounds like a party.
And you brought some beautiful cheese with you today.
Thank you.
So this small one here with yellow and sort of something on the top is what?
That is a fresh farmer's cheese rolled in a curry spice rub. So it's a homemade rub that gives a lot of flavor and balances with the really milky, fresh curd in the inside of the cheese.
Mm. Okay. And now, of course, I have this great card that Claire gave me, and this is the wine tasting guide. So, Claire, what would go with the farmer's cheese with curry on the top?
That's a hard one.
Can we taste it first?
Absolutely.
So it's not on the card, I see. Okay. Well, that's a way, so we'll try that one. Number to call is 800-348-2551.
There's many different kinds of wine. I'm sure Dominique could jump in here.
What do you think, Dominique?
I mean, having not tried it yet.
All right, we'll try it now.
Certainly something with coriander, usually, you know, something with a little bit of sweetness to it, because mm-hmm. coriander can give you, a curry can give you a little bit of heat.
Okay.
So something like maybe a Riesling or a Viognier, something to a little bit of sweetness to offset the spices in the curry. But it still would pair well with the richness.
Okay, and you brought a wine that you have poured, and what is it you have poured, Dominic?
This is the Pierre-Yves Colin Marais Chasson Mon Rocher 2008.
Okay.
It's a white burgundy, 100% Chardonnay, and it's going to have some lovely floral notes in the nose, citrus. In the palate, you're going to get a lot of minerality to it, a little bit of flint, smells like matchbook, and this, I'm sure, will pair with a lot of the cheeses as well.
All right, let's try the cheese. Mm. Oh, boy. You can really taste the curry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a more of a fun cheese, good for crackers, good for snacking on.
Good for radio shows as well. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Mike in Glens Falls. Mike, you're on.
Oh, guys, I had a question about organic red wine that I've been drinking recently. When I get to the end of the bottle, I find this crystallized stuff, and I was wondering if you can fill me in on what that is.
Those are probably tartrate crystals. Tartrate crystals just occur in the fermentation process.
That's in non-organic wines as well?
It's in, you're going to get it in whites, reds. A lot of times with wines, they cold stabilize, where they chill the wines, and then those crystals will settle to the bottom, and it'll pump out the wine that, you know, is from the top 90% of the barrel or something like that. You know, they're perfectly harmless. They're not, you know, if you get a mouthful at the end, it's not going to be pleasant, but certainly not going to do any damage.
All right, and I've never attempted to pair any cheese with a red wine. What would I be looking at in the way of that?
With pairing anything, you always want to think about the overall weight. So if it's a very rich cheese, like a double creme or a triple creme or something like that, you're going to want a heartier wine. If it's something light and grassy, maybe like a Chèvre or another type of goat cheese, it's really grassy and light, you're going to want to go with a lighter wine. So think about the more fat in the cheese, the richer the cheese is, the heavier duty the wine you're going to want.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thanks very much. Thank you. Now, in much of the wine that is commercially available, those crystals are filtered out?
If the wines are cold stabilized, they'll either be filtered out, they could be fined out, or they all settle to the bottom. And then when they do a pump over, which is when they transfer the wine from barrel to barrel or from tank to tank, they'll let it all settle to the bottom and then just pump out, you know, everything but the last foot or so of the wines and, to leave that behind.
We are talking wine and cheese on Food Friday here today. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Claire and Sandy, you mentioned before the show started that one of the most popular things at Epicurean is the cheese platter. What are some of the most popular cheeses you serve?
There's a wide spectrum of cheese that we serve. I mean, a lot of people like blue cheese, and there's many different kinds of blue cheese, starting from, for example, a Point Reyes blue that's from California that's very mild and creamy, to something that's heavier and denser, like a Fourme d'Ambert from France, which has a much stronger flavor. And if we talk about the cheese and the wine, like Dominic was saying, you know, it's hard to say which cheese would go best with which wine until you think about how strong the cheese is, how creamy it is, how heavy it is. So, for example, with a Fourme d'Ambert, you might like a port. Where with the creamier cheese, that's a lighter blue flavor, like the Point Reyes, you might go for a Merlot or even a Chardonnay because the cheese is not too salty. So another point where you have to be careful is if a cheese is really salty, you don't want to salt it with a wine that has a lot of tannins because that's just going to make the tannins come through more in the salt. So it's really you're thinking about balance when you're matching the two. Other cheese that are always requested are the soft rind cheese or the blooming cheese. The blooming rind cheese.
I see, yes.
Like a Brie or a Chaours or a Brie à Savarin. And there again, you have different amount of fat in the cheese. The higher the fat, usually, you will want to match it with a higher acidity wine. If you have a whole assortment of cheese and they really go the full airy, wine that will pair well are usually champagne because champagne has high acidity and it can cut through a lot of different tastes of it.
So it's a good all-purpose accompaniment to some. In fact, we have four or five different cheeses here. Susie Konecki, what's the toughest one of these to make?
I would say this one right here. It's the Tobassi. It's a washed rind cheese. And it's tough because all of our cheeses are natural rind, so we don't put plastic or wax on the exterior of any of them. But we need to highly control what's growing on the outside.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to enhance certain bacteria and molds and inhibit other bacteria and molds. And blue, as you were mentioning, is a very prevalent mold that really likes to take hold on cheeses. If you're making blue cheese, that's convenient for you. But we're trying to make this cheese that has an orangey rind.
Yeah.
And the bacteria on that is called Brevibacterium linens. That's actually the same bacteria that would occur on a natural Munster cheese. You know, if you weren't buying deli Munster cheese that had food coloring like you see nowadays.
Yeah.
This is the same as that original bacteria. And it needs very specific requirements in terms of the environment in order to take hold. So it requires a lot of care.
So most of the commercially available, regularly available cheese will have artificial rind?
Yeah, most likely it was aged in a vacuum sealed bag. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have to control what was growing on the rind because it wasn't a natural rind. Whereas you can see these, they look somewhat rustic. These were just sitting in open air in a cheese cave. So it requires a lot more control.
Are there a lot of cheese caves in Williamstown?
Just three.
Yeah.
And they're all at Cricket Creek Farm.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And you guys...
She brings a really good point because people always ask us when they buy cheeses, should, you know, can I have it in my car? You know, what should I do? And I said, well, at my house, I leave them out on the marble slab, even in the summer, because cheeses that are cold don't have any taste. And I say, don't wrap it in plastic wrap because you're suffocating the cheese, basically. So when we sell our cheese, we wrap it in a special paper that has sort of a microfilm on the inside. It's a paper. Mm-hmm. And then on the inside, it's sort of looks a little bit like plastic with teeny little holes in it. And what it does is it lets the cheese breathe.
Would you like to see some, Ray?
Sure.
I have some of the special paper with me.
Why don't you show me that? We'll take a short break, and then we'll get back. We have many people on the line, and we will take some calls, although we're having so much fun. But no, we will take calls. 800-348-2551. Back in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Pangea, North Bennington, Vermont, catering Southern Vermont weddings and corporate events with menus designed for special occasions, VermontFineDining.com and Facebook. Marbletown True Value Hardware, Stone Ridge, a locally owned independent source offering Loge cast ironware cookware and specialty kitchen items, MarbletownHardware.com, True Value, Start Right, Start Here. Rare Earth Wine Bar, On the Circle, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in pairing food and wines from around the world, Rare Earth Wine Bar on Facebook, and Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, a Food Friday. We're having a fine old time here. We're having some wine and some cheese. Dominic Pernomo here is from Yono's Restaurant. Claire and Sandy Pogue of Epicurean, which is in Colony?
Latham.
Latham. It is in Latham. And Susie Konecki, cheesemaker at Cricket Creek Farms. And we welcome your calls at 800-348-2551. Let's go to Carla in Holyoke. Hi, Carla.
Hi. I have a question regarding wine. I just want to know if the wines that are grown, you know, the grapes, the types that are grown in a certain country, if they do go well with their food. It's there. For instance, if you're in Tuscany and you're having, a roast pork dinner and they have Chianti, is that the right thing? Or Brunello, is that what you should be drinking with that? Or do you find sometimes that they don't match with the foods?
I mean, certainly that the food and the wine has gone hand in hand for longer than or almost as long as wine has been being made. Terroir is really important. By terroir, what I mean is, you know, the earth. What is the earth going to give you? You can't grow Pinot Noir well in all over the world. It grows wonderfully in Burgundy. It grows wonderfully in Oregon, in Northern California. It does not grow well in Southern California. It does not grow well in, Bordeaux, for example, or other places. So I think, you know, to let the land speak to, you know, what it will grow best in that certain area, I think is most important. And as you mentioned, if you're in Tuscany and you're having roasted pork with, you know, some beautiful Amarzano tomatoes or something like that, you know, some Sangiovese type of wine is going to go best, whether it's a Chianti or Brunello or along those lines.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you very much. The number to call is 800-348-2551. It's Liz in Kingston. Hi, Liz.
Hi, how's it going? I have a wine question also.
Okay.
I recently have started drinking white and red wine, and a friend of mine told me that the glasses you use definitely matter as far as the aroma goes. So my question is on that.
Everyone's nodding.
I'm going to say one thing before Dominique
will chime in. Claire.
But what I would say to you is, you really need to experience that for yourself. So you should get like a really cheap wine glass or like just a regular glass and put a wine in it and then get the right glass for the right kind of wine that you have and see the difference for yourself with a good quality wine. I have a great story. We were at the Wine Spectator event, and they were we were doing port flights, and we were served ports going back decades and decades. And on the last pour, they gave us the regular tasting glass that they have in the hotel, and then they gave us a Riedel port glass, and they poured the port in both so we could see the difference. And it was really a ha-ha moment. So I think for everybody to experience that, they need to, you know, feel it themselves.
Why? I mean, why is the shape of a glass and the size of it, why does it matter?
Well, it's also the thinness of the glass.
Really?
It's not just the shape of the glass.
All right, Dominic, explain.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'll use Riedel as an example. Riedel Stemware, it's a family-owned company. They're based in Austria. These are the glasses that we're enjoying today and that the glasses that we use at our restaurants. And they scientifically design and engineer each glass to go with certain wines. So the Pinot Noir glass is different from a Bordeaux glass, than a Cabernet glass, which is different than a Syrah glass. So there's not just a red wine and a white wine.
But why? But what about them
so
is
for,
different?
For example, like the shape of the bowls, you know, for a Chardonnay glass, which actually looks like what most people call a red wine goblet, it's a wide bowl with a wide wide open rim at the top. So when you swirl the wine, something like a Chardonnay, which tends to be a little heavier in oak and a little heavier in alcohol, allows that to burn off, to evaporate, and that way allows you to smell, you know, to get delve deeper into the wine.
Yeah.
Cabernet glass is something, you know, shaped like what we have in front of us. It has a bigger bowl as well, allows you to swirl the wine, get more surface area, but concentrates the nose as well. So, I mean, there's, you know, somebody far smarter than I is the one who decided what goes better with what. But as Sandy said, as Claire said, you know, they have, the Riedel does seminars, you know, throughout the country, and they'll pair four different wines in the correct glass and in the wrong glass. And it really is, you know, there's far fewer skeptics than myself. And, you know, once after that, I was pretty impressed with
just
tasting. Yeah, absolutely.
So in other words, those of us in suburbia, let's say, who have a couple of different wine glasses, we really should make the investment in a wider array. And what's the best way to find out about that stuff? For those of us not in the know,
you can go on the internet, and Riedel is a good place to start. It's spelled R-I-E-D-E-L.
Okay.
So if you Google it, you can get a lot of education just going on their site.
You know, we're having so much fun. I left Liz.
I'm
line.
I'm still here.
Yeah, you
yes,
have a
I'm
follow-up?
Still here. No, you guys have answered my questions. I had a feeling it was about the aromas, you know, and the and the taste and the smell. So I'm going to do some experimenting. I thank you guys very much.
Thanks, Liz. Have a great weekend. And what a fun thing to experiment on.
One other thing, the stems on them, too, as well, is how you hold it and where it hits your palate is the shape of the bowl.
Okay.
So it all kind of plays into it. You know, probably 5 or 10 years ago, the O series bowls, which the stemless, you know, those look great, but, you know, you're holding with your hand is warming up the glass.
Yeah.
So that does skew the temperature of the wine as well, which is important.
All right, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551, and Douglas in Albany's up. Douglas.
Hi, guys. How are you? You sound like everybody's having the most fun there.
Oh, these are fun
how
shows.
How do I get your yes. job? That's great. Yeah. I just had a quick comment to make, and then you guys can discuss it, I suppose. I work for an Italian sparkling wine company, and at our office, we'll often pair our Prosecco with Parmigiano Reggiano cheese, which seems to be the perfect pairing. I'd be interested to know what hard cow's milk cheeses upstate would pair well with Prosecco. And then the other thing is sparkling Moscatos. They're sweeter. They're not like Proseccos, which are dry, but we really like them with blue cheeses. And again, I'd be very interested to know what New York or Massachusetts blue cheeses might pair well with Italian sparkling Moscato. And I'll take the answer off the phone.
Douglas, thank you very much for the call. All right, panel, what do you think?
One of the things, you know, a dry sparkling wine will go great with a dry cheese, something a little saltiness to it. If you have you mentioned blue cheese earlier, when you have a a wine that is a cheese that's heavier in salt content, a sweet wine goes well with that. Like as you mentioned, a sparkling Moscato.
Mm-hmm.
So sweet and salty, it's kind of an interesting play on each other, you know, which pairs well together.
Mm-hmm. All right, what do we have here, Susie Konecki?
This is the Maggie's Round. It's okay. The cheese we're eating today is aged about a year.
It's this one?
Mm-hmm. Mm. It's this one with
You can hold rustic. It up for the camera. By the way, we're on the internet. You can watch us at WAMC.org. Hi. There you go. All right.
And this is an Italian tome-style cheese, but it's our own recipe. So all the cheeses that we make at Cricket Creek Farm are kind of our own take on European classics. So this was cut from a 20-pound wheel. Like I said, was aged about a year, was made in last March. And I think that this cheese is a great example of expressing. Someone was asking before about, you know, local wines, local flavor. I think that this cheese is a really great expression of our local flavor that we have, you know, in this region, but also on the farm, because it's a very simple cheese. There's not a lot added to it, but it has a really beautiful, you know, grassy, earthy flavor that really comes from the cows and the farm.
Now, you use all your own milk at Cricket Creek.
Absolutely.
And the cows are milked and they're all right there.
They're all right there, which is super important for making cheese, because you might not realize it if you're just picking up a glass of milk from the supermarket, but all milk is incredibly different in terms of the protein content, the fat content, the sugars in the milk, the flavor, the enzymes. Really everything about it can differ from cow to cow, but certainly from farm to farm and region to region. And so using our own milk that we are at least somewhat in control of and can really know it intimately helps tremendously for doing something with that product and turning it into what we have here, the cheeses.
And all the cheeses made at Cricket Creek are cow milk.
Yes. Yep. We milk about 25 to 30 cows at any given time. We have a little bit of a mix of breeds, but we don't milk any other species.
All right. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. It's Lynn's turn. Lynn in Saratoga, you're up.
Hi. I heard, you know, kind of a question. It goes with terroir, which was brought up by a previous caller a little bit earlier. And we have so many new small wineries and cheesemakers showing up at our local markets. I mean, the concept of terroir, is that here in upstate New York? I mean, if people are making their cheese here, is it going to go with the local wine? And when I go to the market, what question should I ask of the cheesemaker so that I get the best chance of finding a wine that matches?
All right. Well, wow. Sandy, you're scowling. What's the matter?
There's a lot in that question.
Okay.
Remember before Dominique was saying that certain types of grape varietal grow better in certain area depending on the climatic condition and the soil. Well, New York State has many different kinds of soil, one. And sometime wine producer in New York State will try to grow every type of wine varietal. And it's not necessarily the best match for our climate, which especially in upstate New York can be difficult like this winter.
Right.
And the soil. So I think the winemakers here in this country, especially in New York State, are pretty young. And they're still discovering what is working best. And we're not at the point where they are in California, for example. I mean, I'm going to date myself, but 30 years ago, I was in California, or let's see, it was the early 1980s, and a lot of their wines weren't that great. And I went, this is a true story, I went to a wine store with Sandy, and they were doing a tasting of 12 different wines from California and from France. And I kind of put up my nose and said, ugh, California wine? At that point, I thought there were some good white California wine, but they really were in their infancy in comparison to where they are today. And
right.
the owner of the shop challenged me, and I said, I will tell you exactly which wine is French and which wine is California. And I didn't make a mistake.
Nah.
And I was very, very young. Well, I'm French. I've been drinking wine since, you know, just I could barely walk. I was drinking wine, or just about. But today, the California wine are some of my favorite wines. They have evolved so much. They have won competition against the European wine. And I think that New York State is really, and the East Coast is really in its infancy. And they have a lot of room to grow.
Is that skill or evolution of generations of grapes?
It's a combination of skills, figuring out what works best with the terroir, and also how old the vines are.
Yeah.
So Dominic, I'm sure, has a lot to add on to this.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly, in the last 5 years, I mean, in the last 2 years, there's been a ton of investment in Long Island and the Finger Lakes, Hudson Valley as well. But there's winemakers from all over the world. There's German winemakers coming in to the Finger Lakes now, investing money because they see the terroir of the Finger Lakes in the climate matches very well to the Moselle and the Rhine, which are arguably the finest Rieslings in the world. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of promise for sure, going on in the state of New York, and I think as a wine making industry, we are very young. In this area, commercially anyway, and I think it's just it's seeing what works and what doesn't, and that's an evolution for sure.
Lynn, thank you. Is it Lynn? Who's on the
line?
Yeah, Lynn. Thanks a lot. There's so many names up there. I wanted to make sure. Thank you very much for the call. Here's one that came in via email. The comment about leaving cheese on the board open interests me. I understand the need to bring a cheese to room temperature before consuming it. However, do you suggest that I open cheese that often comes sealed in some kind of a wrapper as soon as I get it home, even if I'm not going to consume it for a few days? Or should I keep it wrapped and in the refrigerator until the day I intend to consume it? That's from Jack in Olive Bridge. Start with you, Claire.
Well, when the cheese is wrapped in a sealed plastic, it's basically dying slowly.
So the cheese is alive.
Absolutely.
The cheese is alive, yes. And so very often, this is interesting because we have people that come in and say, oh, I bought that cheese at the supermarket, but your cheese doesn't taste the same. No, because they kill the cheese by wrapping it in that plastic wrap or by sealing it with a machine.
Yeah. Does cheese scream
so
when it dies?
You can kind of resuscitate the cheese a little bit by taking it out of the plastic, mm-hmm, and creating an environment that would... It's like you're resuscitating the cheese, more or less.
Yeah.
So when you put it on the clean marble slab, which is kind of tends to stay cooler, and you put a globe over it, you're kind of controlling what bacteria are going to come in contact with it, but you're trying to let it come to life again. And sometimes you can resuscitate a cheese, and sometimes it's impossible. My advice is really to find a cheese shop that's near where you are, if you're really into cheeses, and start experimenting with, especially if they keep the cheeses, the way they are supposed to be kept. That's the key thing.
Right, a dying cheese is a very painful sound.
Is it? I'm sure these haunt your dreams.
I hope you never hear it.
Hearts break everywhere.
For Jay's question, I think that it really depends on the kind of cheese. Certainly, if it's wrapped in plastic, it'd be best to take it out of the plastic when you got home, and wrap it up in some kind of paper or something that's breathable. As far as whether to leave it out or put it in the refrigerator, it really depends on what kind of cheese you're talking about. If it's a really fresh cheese, like a spreadable cheese or a goat cheese or a Blumy Rind cheese, that isn't going to keep very long in the summertime if it's out. Most cheeses, though, age much warmer than a refrigerator and do well warmer than a refrigerator, more like 50 to 60 degrees. So if you have something like a wine cellar or a basement, it'd be fine to leave cheese out, for days in that kind of environment. A harder cheese, a drier cheese, or a longer aged cheese would do well on your counter, even for several days until you plan to eat it. So it depends mostly on the moisture level of the cheese, I would say.
I would agree with that. And also how warm you keep your house.
Absolutely.
Right. Like
so
our
if your house,
house
is cool,
at 60 degrees.
Yeah,
so
you're all set.
We're good.
1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's grab another call before the next break. Betsy in Orange, you're up. Hi, Betsy.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about blue cheese. I'm a blue cheese lover, and I'm the only one in my house that is. and I buy the smallest little pieces that I can, but unfortunately I don't, you know, eat it for days on end. So how do you know when blue cheese has gone past its prime or is unsafe to eat? I've often cut mold off the outside of the blue cheese and eaten what's on the inside to, you know, I'm still alive and talking about it. So I'm hoping that's okay to do. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not a blue cheese expert, but I would say that most mold that you would find growing in or on the cheese is not going to harm you, as long as the cheese is kept in a clean environment, as long as, you know, there's nothing toxic or pathogenic being introduced to it, you should not be worried about it. And what mold you're most likely to find on the outside of the cheese is perhaps a thin white mold, like a geotrichum or a penicillium candidum, or maybe even a little bit of blue mold that is the same kind of mold that you find on the outsides of other cheese that you're used to eating. For example, brie has white mold on the outside that folks are generally comfortable with, but when that same type of white mold appears on another cheese that might seem unfamiliar, it can be off-putting. But it's not toxic, it's not going to harm you, it's absolutely fine to eat. I would say, in terms of when a cheese is actually bad, if you smell it and it's very off-putting, if you are about to taste it and it seems like, you know, if you put it in your mouth and it makes you want to spit it out, or if it seems, you know, like it's really disagreeing with you, that's a sign. But that's a sign. But just by any mold growing on the outside, I would not be afraid of that. However, if you don't want to eat that mold, you can probably brush it off. Take a damp cloth to it, or just slice off, a paper-thin layer, and the rest of the cheese is absolutely fine.
Claire, you want to weigh in?
I have one quick follow-up question, if I might.
Oh, go ahead, Betsy.
Is there a possibility of finding somewhere that paper that you spoke about, that it has sort of the micro pores in it, to rewrap a cheese that you find at the store that's wrapped in plastic?
Absolutely, yeah. Several cheese shops in the area actually do sell cheese paper. You could always ask them. Also, butcher paper works pretty well. There's also a company in Massachusetts in Deerfield called New England Cheesemaking Supply. And they sell equipment for commercial-scale cheesemakers like myself, or home-scale cheesemakers, and also just for consumers who may want to learn how to keep their cheese a little better, in better environment.
All right. Great. Betsy, thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a short break here. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We'll hit the home stretch. Wine and cheese and your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs. CafeCapriccio.com for reservations. Kerry Haddad Gallery, Hudson, New York, presenting In the Black, featuring a selection of black paintings, drawings, and caustics and sculpture, now through April 13th, open daily 11 to 5. CarrieHaddadGallery.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community, berkshire.coop. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com.
Fox Pop on WAMC.
Hi,
everyone. We're back on the air. How are you? It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Claire and Sandy Pogue are here from Epicurean. Dominic Pernomo is here from Yono's. And Susie Konecki of Cricket Creek Farms, who has brought delicious cheese. And we just had some. And what is this?
This is the Tabassi, the washed rind cheese I was mentioning before.
Okay. It's washed rind?
It's washed rind, yeah. So
now, what does that mean?
After this cheese is made and brined, while it's aging in our caves, we wash it regularly with a cocktail of several different bacteria, yeast, and mold that both impart this color and beautiful rich flavor to the rind, and then also help to break down the paste in the inside of the cheese by helping to kind of digest the protein and the fat that's in there.
Delicious.
Thank you.
It's a very nice work.
That works perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, one thing is we started with the curry cheese. And what I would recommend to people, if you're going to do a cheese tasting, start with the mildest cheese and work your way up to the strongest cheese.
Makes sense.
Okay, just because you will, your palate won't be able to perceive the nuances as much. It's just like when you taste wine. You start by the lighter wine and you go to the heavier, more
well, that makes sense.
Wine.
Ray was just so excited about the bright orange curry color.
Well, you know, you show me a shiny object or something bright, and I'm like a bass if you show me a shiny object. All right, let's go to Barb in Clifton Park. Barb, you're up.
Hi there. Thank you so much. This is so interesting. I've had to change a few of my questions because you've answered some of them.
Oh, good.
But you mentioned the butcher paper. Does wax paper also work? And you talked about the rind on brie. Can you eat that rind? I mean, I always have. I'm still around.
well, I guess you answered your own question.
About the grapes. Now, each year we get new grapes, but how does the age of the grapevine change what the grape is? Because you talked about the California wines being older.
These are all great questions, and it'll take the whole show to answer them all, but let's move right on through. We'll start with the cheese and the wax paper.
Go
and
for it.
Quick, do you also give tours at the cheese place?
At Cricket Creek?
Yes.
Wax paper would be fine. We do give tours, but you're welcome to come at any time, even if you don't have a scheduled tour. It's a very open farm. We actually have a viewing area between our farm store and our milking parlor. So if you come at 5 p.m., which is when the cows get milked, you can watch the whole process. You can look in, watch the cows come in, watch us, you know, taking the milk, letting the cows out. They sometimes like to look out the windows and poke their head at you, stick out their tongue, make a funny face. So definitely encourage you to come by. We also have a viewing area into the creamery. So you can come at any time, watch us make cheese, watch us do dishes and clean things up, which is mostly what happens in a creamery.
How exciting.
We also offer cheese making classes and do have tours as well if you're coming with a large group.
So you have a website, right?
We do.
What is that website?
It's www.cricketcreekfarm.com. You can also find us on Facebook or on Instagram. So definitely check out our online presence and get in touch if you'd like to come by.
All right, Barb. And then quickly we'll talk about the grapes and the – go ahead.
Can I chime in for a second? If you have parchment paper, I would prefer that to the wax paper because that's a little more breathable.
Okay,
you can get parchment
you.
Paper in the supermarket.
Okay.
And for the rind question.
Yes, the aging of the vines.
I think the rind is the best part of the cheese in most cases, especially if you're talking about a blooming rind.
Okay.
Like on a brie or on a charours or something. But also, if you're talking about a mountain cheese like a Tome de Savoie or something like that, the rind is the part of the cheese that has the most terroir in it. And if you take the rind away, you're taking it. It would be like saying making a cream sauce and taking the cream away. You know, it's like it's an integral part of the cheese where you don't want to eat the rind and where it's waxy and it's really hard, like a Parmesan rind you can't eat.
Yeah.
I call that chewing gum for the dogs.
Dominic, regarding the aging of the lines of the vines.
Sure. So vines, just like humans, you know, it takes a few years to get their act together, and then they have, you know, some very good mature years, and then, you know, some for the most part, a lot of the vines, you know, the production starts to lower in their golden years, and then a lot of times what happens is they'll rip those out and replant newer vines. You know, but then there's, you know, some vines, you know, that are 100 plus years old. So they're going to get smaller yields out of them, but the complexity that you're going to get, you know, is something that you can't get out of the younger vines.
All right. Barb, thank you very much. Let's go to Paul in Saratoga. Paul, you're up.
Hi. Great show.
Thanks.
I've been looking at Oregon wine recently in Willamette Valley Vineyards, that region. There's a winery there that they say on their website, their soil and the elevation is very similar to Burgundy, France, and their wines are very good. I wanted to find out if you had any experience with Oregon Pinot Noirs, and also for the cheese people, do you recommend or make any non-dairy cheese?
I'll field that first. I was fortunate enough about a year ago to be out in Willamette Valley, and I was always a big fan of their wines, but I came back even more blown away. There were so many wineries out there that we just don't see on the East Coast because the production is so small. Well, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, compare them as much to Burgundy. I mean, they're definitely similar in style as far as the amount of complexity, the acidity. It's a cooler climate than it is in California, and there are some really exceptional wines being made in the Willamette Valley, and with even more to that, there's, you know, a bunch of sub appellations that are within the Willamette Valley that just have an incredible amount of potential, and just the wines continue to get better every year. So, I mean, we have an entire page on our wine list dedicated to just Pinot Noirs from the Willamette Valley. So certainly something, there's great value for some of them, and there's, you know, some of them that are very high end and are certainly special occasion wines.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then the second question?
About, do you have any recommendations for non-dairy cheeses with wine?
Uh-huh.
What do you mean by that?
Well, for the cheese producer, do you produce any non-dairy cheese, or you're strictly a dairy?
What is non-dairy
cheese? You
mean
like soy cheese?
Oh, I see.
Yeah, rice or soy, yeah. I do that with pizza, and I've been non-dairy for 30 years, so I wanted to see what you thought of pairing.
The French lady is looking nonplussed at the moment.
I am a purist. And I'm not sure why you're having non-dairy cheese, because it sounds to me like it's an oxymoron.
Well, maybe he can't
but
eat
but maybe
the dairy.
In the year 3000, like we won't think so.
Oh, just for health reasons. I had a lot of allergies, and I
feel
a lot better the last 30 years since I gave up dairy.
Well, I used to have dairy allergies. There's actually a treatment out there that's called NAET cure your lactose intolerance.
Okay, now, we don't, of course, endorse any medical procedures here on the program. So from our legal department to you, this is just a, you know,
yes,
sort of a casual conversation.
Casual conversation, and it's all natural, and it's just acupressure.
I would suggest, you know, as far as the pairing goes, what, you know, whatever the cheese is, I don't want to say emulating, but whatever it's going for. If it's something, again, that's light and grassy, if it's meant to emulate something like a Chev, you know, pick a lighter wine, maybe a Sauvignon Blanc, something along those lines. If it's a saltier cheese, maybe a sweeter wine. If it's a richer, I don't know if I could say creamier when you say non-dairy
well,
cheeses.
Yeah.
But something that has that texture, you know, think of a wine that's a little bit bigger, bolder, something with some tannin, Cabernet.
So basically the same as you would.
Same thing. It's not necessarily about the individual components, but more of the overall weight, I think, which is the most important thing.
Paul, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. And over we go to Roger in Warwick. Roger.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. Great show.
Thanks.
You know, we've talked a lot about pairing wines with cheeses, and bourbons are very hot these days. Have you ever given any thought to bourbon pairings with cheeses?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what cheeses go along with bourbons?
Yeah, Dominic.
Yeah, I mean, bourbons are great. Obviously, you know, the things that pair best with bourbon are going to be the types of cheeses that have a little bit of nuttiness to them. You know, something that is a little richer because, you know, just the alcohol by volume of bourbon is going to need something that's a little richer.
Yeah.
It'll be able to handle something with more fat to it. But, yeah, certainly something that has like a nutty type of rind I think will be a perfect pairing for a bourbon for sure.
Okay.
You know what I think pairs best with bourbon, Roger?
Please.
More bourbon, actually.
and I have to tell you, just a follow-up on the glass conversation with wine, and I get a hard time when I go into a bar with a friends or my wife, when I say, hey, I want bourbon, but I want it in a lowball glass, and they bring it to you in a snifter, and the bourbon tastes completely different when it's in a small neck snifter versus a large lowball glass.
All right, so panel, are you in agreement there?
I am.
Definitely.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
We actually have whiskey glasses that we use for whiskeys and, you know, all types, and it's a short, maybe 3-inch glass, and it has a little bit of flare out.
Which Roger was calling a lowball glass?
No, not a lowball glass. It's just a whiskey tasting glass.
Okay, what is a lowball glass?
Like a rocks glass?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
A rocks glass. Like, you would be amazed at how many restaurants and bars don't carry them anymore. And when I spoke to a friend of mine, he said that's because they break easily.
Or they're going, so or you're going to the wrong restaurants. Either one.
Yeah. Oh, that could be.
Hey, Roger, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Tom in Hillsdale. Tom, you're up.
Hi. After all, you are a New York State radio station, pretty much.
Okay.
Regardless of where Alan lives. But, you know...
We cover seven states. I mean, be fair.
Well, yeah, sure.
Okay.
I think it would be good to give a little bit more credence to New York State wines. Now, admittedly, the varietals that have been spoken of haven't included Riesling, which is the grape that does best.
Well, Dominic spoke about Riesling extensively, the Finger Lakes
I
Riesling.
I might have missed it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But
I just have, and of course, grapes have been grown in the Finger Lakes for, 100 years, more.
Okay. Well, I don't think anyone's really giving them, I think Dominic would have something to say about this. Dominic?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge proponent of New York State wines. I mean, again, we have an entire page on our wine list dedicated to New York State wines.
And there's some very good ones.
There's some wonderful wines, and there are more and more that we get every day. And I think there probably was a knock on them. And I just think as commercially growing, we're still relatively young. When you think about Europe, which has been doing it for hundreds and 700, 600, 800 years, whatever it is, and I think it's finding what we're best at. You know, Riesling obviously does very well. There's a lot of Gruner Veltliner being grown out there because it's similar, not only terroir, but the weather conditions, a cooler climate. You know, there are certain wines that are not going to thrive, but still continue to be grown. When we find what we're best at, I think that's the best thing to do. You know, they don't grow. They're not growing Pinot Noir in Bordeaux. There's a reason, because Cabernet and Merlot and Cab Franc do much better. I think that when, as a region, when we find out what our stride is and what we do best, I think when we stick to that, think it's only going to, 30 years from now, it won't even be, a question of the merit of New York State wines, because I think we're on that trajectory now.
All right, let's go to Frederick in Dutchess County. Frederick, you're up.
Hey, how you doing? I love the show.
Thanks.
It's a wine question. I tend to enjoy the heavier, real dark, real sedimenty wines. And when I go to the store to pick them out, is there anything in particular that I should be looking for when picking it out? Like, should I pay more attention to the price, the vintage, or even the shape of the bottle itself? I like to pick bottles of wine out, but not really sure where to go with it.
Okay.
I would definitely think about, wine, grapes are their produce. I mean, think of something from a warmer climate is going to give you a bigger body of wine. You know, something from whether it's Central Coast of California or the South of France or Australia, South America, et cetera. The warmer the climate that the wine is grown in, the higher the alcohol, that comes from the more ripe that the grapes get. The riper the grapes get, the higher the alcohol, because that the sugar in the grapes converts to alcohol in fermentation. So in a warmer climate, you're going to get those bigger, bolder, full-bodied wines. Obviously, things like Zinfandel, Syrah, Grenache, those are going to be your big fruit-forward wines to look for. And if you find if there's something that you look for, I would suggest finding the place that it's from. If you have a Cabernet from Paso Robles, look for other wines from Paso Robles, because that's going to give you a better, a better taste of the terroir of the area, that ripeness level, versus if you get a Cabernet from a cooler climate. You know, they're both Cabernets, but they could taste completely different.
Okay, that seems to make sense to me.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, we have about a minute here. Let's try this. What have we here, Susie?
This is the Berkshire Bloom. We were talking about bloomy rinded cheeses before, and what makes it a bloomy rinded cheese is that we're adding cultures to it that literally bloom, create this mold, ripened rind on the exterior of it. And those same bacteria will work their way inward and slowly ripen the paste of the cheese. So the one that we're tasting today is fairly ripe. The paste is fairly broken down, real melty in your mouth.
Yeah. And so,
delicious.
It is delicious. How long does it take to make that?
Yeah, great question. So this cheese is about 3 weeks old.
That's all?
Yeah.
Amazing.
We keep it in a fairly warm room, and we actually keep it out at room temperature at about 70 degrees for a couple days to really give that bacteria a good head start. We were just hearing about how sweeter fruit will make higher alcohol content wines, and the same process of fermentation is true for the cheese. They're a nice pairing in that they taste good together, but they're also very similar biochemical processes in terms of making the product, because this cheese, as you leave it in the warm room, fermentation will occur and the bacteria will digest the sugar in the milk and break it down.
Wow, amazing. Now, we're out of time, but people can find out more at Cricket Creek Farm, singular, right? CricketCreekFarm.com?
CricketCreekFarm.com.
And Claire and Sandy Pogue, you guys have a website too, right? What is that?
Epicurean-ny.com.
And Dominic, you made it without having another baby here today.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Carolyn.
And Yono's online?
Yeah, PernomoHospitality.com.
All right, well, thank you all for being here, and thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to Zach, the engineer. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell, who answered the phones. Ian Pickus, filling in as producer this week, doing a heck of a good job. Thanks again. Next week, we're back at 2 o'clock with another Medical Monday. Stay tuned now for a news update, and have a great weekend.